accessorizing, new level, yes. Totally new level. So, welcome.
How wonderful. Thank you, Lonnie. Okay, we are going to just quick do a children's message without Bill. I think he's off doing Thanksgiving festivities, so we're just going to hold the consciousness of our youth in the center, and if you could all repeat after me, whether you're here or at home, please repeat after me. We love you.
We love you.
We bless you.
We bless you.
We believe in you.
We believe in
you. You are the face of God. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so now let's have Reverend Karen Mondragon, our practitioner, Reverend, who's doing our invocation. She is making her way into the stage, and check out her pajamas, if you would. Pretty awesome stuff. Yeah.
Complete with stole, I might add. I would like to invite all the ministers and practitioners, wherever they are, to please stand to pay honor to God, to pay honor to Spirit as we go into prayer. I absolutely know that as we join together, breathing in the breath of life, the breath of Spirit, the breath of all that there is, all that there was, and all that there will be, we go deep into prayer. We go deep into that space of connection, that space of calm, that space of harmony with the universe. As we know the precious, beautiful light, the magnificent power that I call God, and my frog's claw clearing my throat, it is all beauty, it is all of the Creator. All those wonderful things, all those wonderful qualities and essences of the Creator, of the great I Am, are who we are. And as I open myself, as I allow that power and that presence within me to express through me as me, I know that that power, that presence is within all life. It is within everyone here. It is within everyone watching. It is within all life. In all forms, on all levels, however it looks, however it appears, it is filled with the spark and the beauty of the Creator. For we are all one within that one heart. Our hearts beat within that one heart. We live and we breathe and we bring kindness into this world as that presence expresses through us. And as I go into this prayer, absolutely claiming and knowing the presence of Spirit today as it speaks through our beautiful minister, Reverend Bonnie Rose. For her messages are of light, are of encouragement, are of joyful expectations for the future and for what we have right here and right now. Whatever our life looks like, however our blessings have appeared to us, whether in the sunshine or in disguises of darkness, they are all of God. The light is within each and every moment that we are blessed with. We are blessed with that appreciation. We are blessed with that knowing, that going deep within and bringing that essence out into this world is our job always. But right here and right now at this time, it is so important that we express who we are. We express our light into our world, into our family, into wherever we are led to go. And in that absolute knowing, in that absolute attitude of gratitude and thanksgiving for all that is, for all that will be, and for all that we have right here and right now, the beauty and the light and the essence of God, of the Creator of all life, the one heart. As this prayer is manifest into the universe, we let go, we let God, and together we say, and so it is.
So it is, and so we allow it to be. As we rest in that divine presence, allowing what is to be, letting Spirit fill our hearts. As we listen to the words of our sacred reading.
Finding That Light in the Darkness by Elizabeth Lesser. The holidays are about joy. but also about struggle. All of the religious parables at the heart of the holidays are about awakening joy in times of darkness. They are about hope and hopelessness, home and exile, celebration and grief. They are never just about joy. Joy is the gold we mine on the human path. But that path traverses all sorts of uncertain and difficult terrains. So when you feel the darkness of the season settle in your heart, you can connect with a whole lineage of seekers who have wrestled with the human condition throughout history. Turn to the spiritual teachings of Hanukkah, Christmas, winter solstice, and the less known December holidays. You probably didn't know that December 8 is Rohatsu, which commemorates the day in 566 BC when the Buddha attained enlightenment. And like Mary and Joseph, who found no welcome at the inn and birthed the baby Jesus in a manger, and like the Maccabees, who reclaimed the desecrated temple and lit the miraculous light of Hanukkah, the Buddha awakened his joy after a long struggle under the Bodhi tree, alone and hungry. Richard Rohr, a Franciscan father, writes, "Truth and goodness are not always found at the top, but often on the edge and at the bottom. Not in the center of the empire, but in the backwaters of Bethlehem." Christmas is the ultimate story of outsiders finding sanctuary, creating family, and birthing joy against all odds. If you are feeling alienated or anxious, or if the despair of the world is weighing heavy in your heart, you need seek no further than the stories of the season to help you find light in the darkness, in the darkest month of the year.
And so, being together, whether we are feeling the darkness or the light, we know it all as one. We know one absolute power that is wholeness, that contains everything. And in that knowing, we breathe in deeply. And then we exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is as it is, and so it is.
Good morning. It's really blanket Sunday for me. What am I grateful for? today.
So you may have noticed that this is the darkest month of the year. See how dark it's getting early in the day? What is that about? I know it does it every year, but it still surprises me every year. You know, and it's dark in the mornings too, and it's cramping my style a little bit. But I think sometimes, particularly in metaphysical teachings, we really focus on the light and how everything's perfect, and darkness is an important part of life as well. The earth certainly knows that. You know, I don't really claim to be a gardener when there's expert gardeners either listening or sitting in the sanctuary, but I think that something mystical must happen in the darkness of the soil. And I've never had a baby, but I think that something mystical happens in the darkness of the womb. And there's this beauty to darkness. It's a place of pause and a place of waiting and a place of introspection. And that is a powerful, powerful thing when we accept it as part of life and when we honor it. In case you didn't hear the reading that Hugh did earlier, I thought it was so beautiful how she went through the various traditions and talked about that. I would say all, I don't know all of the religious traditions, but I'm willing to bet that all of the religious traditions have some type of honoring of darkness. You know, in Judaism, it's the Hanukkah story, where there's not enough light, not enough oil for the lamps in the temple, and yet they have faith, and the oil persists, it lasts for 8 days, and the Christian story of a baby, an expectant mother and father moving into this barn and having a child born in this dark and dingy stable, and then the story of the Buddha. Bodhi Day, the day of his enlightenment, December 8th, I believe that's in Zen Buddhism, where he awakens after spending time under the Bodhi tree, perhaps in inner darkness, confronting his demons. And then, of course, there's the solstice, those who celebrate the solstice. All of those things are such beautiful traditions for honoring that which is dark and that which is fallow and that which is at rest. Here at the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living, we have our own opportunity to honor that which is at rest, and that is called Pajama Sunday. Pajama Sunday to me is a symbol. First of all, it evolved because it's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, and sometimes people need a little bit of, expansion after Thanksgiving. So it started because of that, but it's also, to me, such a beautiful symbol of the power of stillness and the power of rest and the power of turning within to discover what it is that Spirit is calling forth from us in the darkness without pushing it, but just willing to be. And so, if you're ever struggling with the darkness, as it said in the reading that Hugh did, you know, turn to the spiritual traditions. Turn to the Hanukkah story. Turn to the Christian story. Turn to the Buddhist story. Turn to solstice. And by all means, turn to Pajama Sunday. They're all beautiful. Speaking of stories, I got a story for you. It's a story of danger, of lust, and gluttony. Therefore, I love it. So some of you may know from, if you've listened to me for a while, that I struggle with a bit of a sugar addiction. Let me downplay it, but I have a serious sugar addiction, and I've been clean for quite a while. You know, there's this theory about COVID that people are going to either turn out to be a chunk, a drunk, or a hunk after the pandemic, and I was working pretty hard on becoming larger during the pandemic, but I calmed it down. I really decided to back off of sugar, and the main reason that I do it, The main reason that I do it is that when I am not thinking about sugar all the time, when I am sugar-free, I am much more available for spirit. I am much more able to hold the space of polarities and stay in that middle ground. It's like the one of the Buddhist precepts where you're not supposed to have intoxicants. Sugar is an intoxicant for me, and so I avoid it in order to be who I want to be and who I need to be in order to fulfill spirit's role for me in my life. So, Thanksgiving, did pretty well. Day after Thanksgiving, went for a hike. Went for a hike up on Sulphur Mountain Road. And I was hiking with a friend, and we were talking about how we successfully navigated Thanksgiving. And hikes for me are a very mindful experience where I watch the dog's body language to see what might be coming around a bend in the trail. And I make sure that they're safe and that I make sure others on the trail are safe based on the dog's body language. And my little dog, Sarah, my big girl, Sarah, who's up there dressed as a nun, anyway, she started doing this really cute little wiggly body language like another dog was coming, and she was particularly excited, so I thought, wow, that must be one of her best friends. And when I circled around the bend, I saw that it was not a dog, it was a gigantic pig charging down the hill, a wild pig charging down the hill, hovering in the trail for just a moment to deal with my dog, and then jumping off a cliff, basically, a steep incline, to go on its merry, we hope, way. It was quite biblical, you know, when doesn't Jesus impose a bunch of demons on a bunch of pigs and they jump off a cliff, right? It was sort of like that. And so, you know, I thought to myself, well, I gotta get the dogs corralled, I gotta get them back. And I had hot dogs in my pouch, in my treat pouch, but I didn't want to scream out, dogs, come get your hot dogs in front of the pig. I thought I might upset it, you know? Anyway, I got the dog back. Of course, seeing A, is there a herd of pigs? There wasn't. And B, what is the pig running from? Which is always questionable up there. Everything was fine. Got the dogs back. Gave them their hot dogs. I said, I got your piggy right here. And we all went on our merry way. But later, when I got home, I thought, you know, it's unusual. I've been hiking that trail for a long time, probably 15 years, and I've never, ever had a gigantic, and I'm talking 300 pounds, a huge pig rush in front of me like a bull and run down the other side of the mountain. So I thought, you know, this may be a symbol. This may be a sign from God. This may be something that I need to investigate. So I went online, looked up dream symbols, looked up Native American symbols, looked up Chinese symbols, and what I discovered is that I'm either going to have a stroke of great fortune, a stroke of bad fortune, or I'm going to have a baby. Wow. Yes. For those of you who did not hear my husband speak into the microphone, he said, no, you're not. How about a puppy?
No, you're not.
No, you're not, again, I know. Well, I could stand here all day and list a bunch of animals I'd like to get, but anyway, moving on, I looked at that and saw that there was no clear message that I was getting from the internet. I did feel that God was particularly rude, however, to send me a pig the day after Thanksgiving when some of us eat a lot, you know. So I made a decision. I decided that I was going to be the pig I wanted to see in the world. And just as a pig was running along, I started going through my house, going, what'll I eat, what'll I eat, what'll I eat, what'll I eat? And there was so much food there because I cooked Thanksgiving dinner for two people, a socially isolated Thanksgiving dinner for actually four people, including my husband and myself, and there was a lot of good stuff there. And it was awesome. And I ate so much. And none of it was good for me. Now, when I said that this was a story about danger, lust, and gluttony, I didn't mean to make it all about me, even though this pig scenario and the ensuing lusting for food and gluttony happened afterwards. It really is about all of us. I'm not saying that anybody in this room or anybody that is watching at home overate or was a glutton over Thanksgiving. I'm sure that did not happen to anybody here. Raise your hand if you were not a glutton over Thanksgiving. Okay, good. Good to know. Okay. But it's really about how our mind can take anything. Our mind can take anything that we're perceiving as darkness and turn it into something. Our mind is like a wild pig that can move into addiction very quickly and can use it to turn ourselves into something that we don't want to be. Remember I said that's why I don't want sugar? It's because it turns me into someone that I don't want to be. You know, and specifically, when we are caught up in some type of an addiction, whether it's a thought addiction or a food addiction or any other substance addiction or a behavioral addiction, you know, we can watch our mind turn into that wild pig and go through all kinds of shenanigans to justify what we are doing. My favorite shenanigan from this incident was in the early evening, I asked my husband, "Would you think poorly of me if I ate the rest of the pecan pie?" And he said, no, go ahead, it hurts my teeth anyway. And I said, well, I have to do it now. I'm taking care of my husband by eating this pie so he doesn't have hurt teeth. And, you know, I see the same thing with various other addictions, not only in me, but in the people that I serve. One of them is complaining. I think that complaining is one of our chief addictions. And as I said to my husband earlier this week, I said to him, you know what? I'm going to work on not complaining, because when I complain, I can feel the wings getting chopped off of the Holy Spirit. And when I am free of complaint, I am much more available for Spirit. I am much more available to serve. I am much more available to see the good. Did I say when I complain, I'm more available to do that? Did I say that wrong? When I do not complain, I'm much more available to be Freudian slip there. I'm much more available to see the good when I'm not complaining, because what you focus on expands. Where attention goes, energy flows. And if we complain, much of our energy goes into looking for something else to complain about, right? I looked up addiction because of this scenario, this story that I told. And one of my go-to people for addiction is Richard Rohr, Father Richard Rohr, who is up there in the balcony somewhere. Oh, he's hiding behind Gandhi. He must be feeling shy today. But Father Richard Rohr talks about addiction a lot. He is really quite the expert on it, and in a very spiritual manner, as do many people who work with addiction, the 12-step groups and whatnot. Addiction is a form of darkness, perhaps. It draws us into the dark night of our soul. Not when we're using, but when we consider what we've done. And Richard Rohr says that he has four what I call noble assumptions about addiction. And he says that the first thing is to assume that everyone is an addict in some way or another. He says it's not a question of if you are an addict, it is a question of how you are an addict. He talks about how the primary addiction that we have is thought. Belief in our own thoughts as reality, belief in our own habits around thought as reality. Belief that our thought is the truth and there is no greater truth encompassing all of it, which in truth, in this center, we believe that that is true, that our thought is not the only reality. It is only our thought and it is only our perspective. He also talks about what we say in this center, that there is a race consciousness, a human race consciousness that holds certain addictions as reality, so that when we are party to that thought, it seems perfectly normal. You know, one of those addictions, there's a whole bunch of them, but one of those addictions is if I make a mistake, it means I'm a bad person, right? That's an addiction. Another way of thinking of that, what I think is the truth, is if I make a mistake, it's a great opportunity to learn. Another addiction that we have is the idea of suffering, that suffering is a bad thing. It means that I've done something wrong, particularly in this denomination where we feel like when we create our lives, which we do, when we create our lives, if we are creating something that causes us to suffer, that causes the internal process of suffering, or that causes something external to go wrong, we feel that we have done something wrong. And what I have learned about suffering is that the absolute second that I embrace suffering and befriend it, suffering is no longer suffering. Suffering is joy. Suffering is an opportunity to see where I have strayed from the path and then gently correct that and learn to love even deeper. So that we have all of these thought addictions going on all of the time. Another race consciousness thought addiction is the thought about complaining. If I complain about this thing, or if I complain about this person, that will make it better. I wish it worked. I wish it worked because I love it so. But if you've ever tried the alternative, like just saying, you know what, I'm not going to complain about this anymore. I'm just going to retreat into the darkness. I'm going to sit with my complaint and see what it's really about. I'm going to retreat into the pajama power of rest and stillness and just allowing the knowing that whatever is going on in my consciousness is in my consciousness. Nobody put it there other than me. It opens up a whole new realm of possibilities and new ways to be with the situation. One of the things that I loved, I listened to a couple of people speaking on the Oprah Network over the weekend, and one of them was Richard Rohr, who said that a sign that you are apart from your true self is when you take offense. That's depressing. And I would say that complaint, or what I spoke about last week, righteous indignation, perhaps worry, perhaps anxiety, that is taking offense at the way things are. And that's a sign that you are not in your true self. Eckhart Tolle, who I listened to as well, said, one thing you can do when you are beset by the desire to complain or worry is to pretend that you chose this. That you chose whatever is quote unquote causing you to worry or complain. And that restores the power to where it belongs. It restores the power into the true self, in the true self that wants to give birth, the light that seeks the darkness so that it can give birth to itself in the darkness. Because, you know, I don't know if I said this before, but I do believe that our primary addiction, other than some of the other things I've said, other than what Richard Rohr said, our primary addiction is our belief in separation from God. Or as Emma Curtis Hopkins, who was one of Ernest Holmes' teacher, would say, it is our belief in separation from good. Good is omnipresent. Our good is omnipresent. There is a good for us, and we get to have it. But, as I said last week when I spoke about grace, good does not force itself upon us. We have to open up the consciousness to receive good, and part of that means the willingness to sit in the darkness, in our pajama power, without fear of judgment, without fear of the darkness, without fear of fear, without fear of anything that seems to be blocking our good, because our good is always greater than what is showing up for us and seemingly negating our good. Let me say that again. Our good is always greater than what is showing up for us and seemingly negating our good. That should be really good news. And it is really good news. It just means that we have to let go of a bunch of stuff that causes us to not receive that good news. It means that we may need to let go of complaining. We may need to let go of worry. We may need to let go of doubt. We may need to let go of fear. And again, when I say let go, I mean befriend. Because what I said about suffering before is so true. I've experienced it so many times. The second that we embrace suffering, it turns into something else. It is no longer suffering. It is joy. So what if we are addicted to something, and the second that we go into the pajama presence into the power, into the stillness, what if the second that we embrace addiction and see it and love it and trust that it is part of wholeness, what if addiction becomes freedom? You know, there are a lot of teachings about darkness and what to do about darkness. And I think that often in this denomination, we are like those monks. Story that I've told a lot, but it's so apropos, I have to tell it again. Story about these monks that were given this assignment to drive out the darkness in this shed, this dark shed. And one of them had a bat, so he was batting away at the darkness. And another one had a broom, and he was sweeping away at the darkness. And another one had, I don't know, what, a BB gun, and he was shooting at the darkness in a dark room, not very safe. I couldn't think of another example, though. But anyway, finally, one of the monks got wise, and he just lit a light in the darkness, a single candle. And the other monks joined suit, and they lit their lights, and the darkness dissipated. It went away. It went to the native nothingness from where it came. Ernest Holmes asks that question in one of his writings on darkness. He says, "Where does the darkness go?" It's like the time I stayed up late at night to Google, "Where do smells go?" It just dissipates. And yet, there's something else, something more. Light doesn't speak the language of darkness, but they are one. They are essential to one another. And I love this quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, Buddhist teacher, who said, "Keeping the sun of your awareness shining like the physical sun is so important. The physical sun lights every leaf and every blade of grass. Our awareness," and I think of awareness as our knowing of our oneness with all things. "Our awareness lights our every thought and feeling, allowing us to recognize them, be aware of their birth, duration, and dissolution without judging or evaluating or welcoming or banishing them." It's important that you do not consider awareness to be your ally, called on to suppress the enemies that are your unruly thoughts, your addictions, your complaining. Do not turn your mind into a battlefield. Do not have a war there, for all of your feelings, joy, sorrow, anger, hatred, all of these are part of yourself. Think of awareness like an elder brother or a sister that is gentle and attentive, who is there to guide and enlighten you. It is a tolerant and lucid presence, never violent or discriminating. From Ernest Holmes, from other spiritual teachers, it is that which holds everything in grace and love. Back to Thich Nhat Hanh, your awareness is there to recognize and identify thoughts and feelings, to identify and recognize thoughts and feelings, not to judge them as good or bad, or place them into opposing camps so that they can fight with one another. And here's my favorite part. I underlined it. Opposition between good and bad is often compared to light and dark. But if we look at it in a different way, we will see that when light shines, darkness does not disappear. It doesn't leave. It merges with the light. It becomes the light. It becomes the light. So any burden that you're carrying, whether it's a COVID burden or a burden about some of the challenges that we're facing in our country, or a personal burden or a burden of health or prosperity or friendship or loneliness, any burden, if we're just able to sit with it and see it, we don't have to fix it. So often, just the seeing of it is like shining a light on it. And we get to see that this thing that we were once calling a burden is actually a beautiful part of our fully human and fully divine nature. There is so much grace in the world, so much goodness for all of us. And this time of the year is a perfect time, because it's dark, because it's still, because it's quieter. This is a perfect time to practice. So for me, personally, I was raised Christian, so I am going to actually discipline myself in a kind and loving way and do an Advent practice where I listen to a chant. It's actually a Sikh chant because I like to blend all the spiritual traditions if I can. I'm going to listen to a chant every day, one particular chant that moves me into a greater place of spaciousness while looking up. While looking up and seeing the heavens, I will lift my eyes up unto the hills from whence cometh my strength or my hope or something like that. I can't remember. From the Sound of Music or the Bible. It's your pick. Lifting up my eyes and then taking the meditation off the mat. And when I start complaining about something, when I start having addictive thoughts about food or anything else, when I start having addictive thoughts about thoughts, whether they're inner or outer, just take a step back and shine the light on them. What I have discovered, you know, I don't know why I went on an eating rampage on Friday. I was doing really well, and I'm back on track now. I didn't have to sit there and figure out why I did it. I just did it, and I turned it over to the light and asked Spirit, the Holy Spirit, the wholeness of Spirit, Buddha, Jesus, Krishna, your dog, whatever works for you. I asked that power and that presence to heal it with me and for me. Because I don't know the answers. There's something so much greater than this small mind. And if we can tap into this greatness, into this beauty, by our willingness to embrace both the darkness and the light, to live in that spaciousness, then we see how beautiful life is all the time. I want that for everybody. I want that for all beings everywhere. And if you want to participate with me in this Lenten activity, let me know. Put it in the comments, and I'll post the chant on Facebook, and we can chat about it on Facebook. And if you're not on Facebook, let me know via email, or you can email the office, and we'll go ahead. Did I say Lent? I said Lent. It's not Lent. It's Advent. And we'll go ahead, and we'll take care of it. We'll work together to really open our hearts to be that loving and accepting and glorious presence of lightness and dark that we already are. Let's begin now, and let us pray.